5 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show. Thanks for hanging out with us here.
5 o'clock somewhere.
5 o'clock right here, baby. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The newspaper is the Daily Oklahoman or just the Oklahoman? Either way, it's the main newspaper there.
Might be the Daily Oklahoman.
Covers the Oklahoma Sooners, and they took note of something that has been fairly obvious to just about anybody who's been paying that much attention. Two Oklahoma quarterbacks, two Heisman Trophy winners, two first-round picks, and yet the one that we all figured would be on his way to a great season is not the one who's been in the league longer than the other. Kyler Murray, statistically, in almost every single metric, including the most very basic wins and losses and overall winning record, Kyler Murray is outperforming Baker Mayfield in almost every single measurable stat this year.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we don't compare Kyler Murray to Baker Mayfield. We compare Kyler Murray to Russell Wilson, or this week we've compared him to Daniel Jones. I don't know that we've ever sat there and said, let's compare Kyler Murray to Baker Mayfield. And maybe for some reason we thought that he's not going to be able to do what Baker Mayfield did. He's just not.
We've never compared him. Baker Mayfield, though, I would say, has been what we wanted Kyler Murray to be. Hey.
First year?
Best case scenario, Baker Mayfield led the Browns to what, a 7-8-1 record last year?
7-8-1 record, came on after a few games, took over as a starting quarterback. I'll look it up.
I think
had a good year.
I think the best case scenario, in fact, I remember at the beginning of the year, people were saying, man, if he can do statistically what Baker Mayfield did, yards, touchdowns, interceptions.
It was written.
It
was written.
Yes. Completion percentage, all of that. Not comparing them as players, but the results. Can Kyler Murray get the results that Baker Mayfield did with the Browns his first time out of the chute?
The numbers were good. 27 touchdowns, 14 picks, 3,700 yards, and a 63.8 completion percentage. They were good.
Yes.
He had a great year.
I remember talking about it right before the season began. Again, not a straight comparison, but just can he achieve what Baker achieved in year one?
I wish I could remember what the name of the story was. I'd look it up, but it was like 5 things or 10 things I expect to happen for the Cardinals. And one of it said they were going to trade Patrick Peterson. And one of it was, I think Murray will have a statistical season similar to that of Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Cardinals were going to like not win as many games or something like that. Baker Mayfield had a terrific year that first year. Baker Mayfield's having an awful year this year. Now, the story in the Daily Oklahoman, that obviously they covered both guys. They were both there at Oklahoma. They both won Heisman trophies, so they have a vested interest in following these guys' careers. It wasn't comparing Kyler Murray's rookie season to Baker Mayfield's rookie season. It was comparing the two of them right now. And when you compared the two of them side by side, what they came up with, and they were right, I mean, it's simple to see, is that Kyler Murray is completely outperforming Baker Mayfield in literally every single statistical category. I mean, Mayfield ranks 32nd in passer rating. He's only completed 56% of his passes. He's got 5 touchdowns and 11 picks. I mean, so when you put Murray's comparisons next to that of Baker Mayfield, night and day difference. Murray's blowing him away this year.
Which, to me, and I think you agree with this, is actually more about Baker Mayfield than it is about Kyler Murray. And that's not taking anything away from Kyler Murray and what he's done. He's obviously been very, very good. Baker Mayfield is having a really bad year. Baker Mayfield already has 11 interceptions on the season. That's the most in the NFL. Baker Mayfield, since he's been in the NFL, has 25 interceptions. That's the most in the NFL since he's been here. The Browns have not won a game when he has a multiple interception game. They're 0-7 when he throws more than one pick in a game. Baker Mayfield has, and to me, and we talked about this earlier, it all came real fast for Baker, right?
Yes.
Number one pick, superstardom. He's the face of that organization. He's in national TV commercials. He's a star. The Browns have, I've lost track of the number of times the Browns have already been on national TV this year, right? Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football. They have been exposed. They have been overexposed. You could make an argument. And I don't want the same thing to happen to Kyler Murray. I don't want Kyler Murray to fall into that too much, too soon trap that it feels like Baker Mayfield has fallen into. I told you earlier, and I haven't listened to the comment, but Ryan Leaf,
scary Baker Mayfield similarities.
Yep. compared Baker Mayfield to him.
It's a big story. New York Post, NFL bust Ryan Leaf sees scary Baker Mayfield similarities. 247 Sports, NFL flameout Ryan Leaf worries about Baker Mayfield. ESPN analyst is starting to worry about quarterback Baker Mayfield is another story that's out there right now. So, he is having such a bad season that, I don't know if they're worried that he's Johnny Manziel or if he's going to get out of this funk. He had such a good year last year. Now, did the hype get to him? Did he think that he had arrived? Did he not work hard enough? He started to do all these commercials. Is there a chance that maybe in his head he had arrived and didn't have to work hard? I don't know. Don't know what to say. But how do you go from having that year he had last year, to being so god-awful this year?
He was asked after Sunday's game, a loss to Seattle, if he's angry.
Are you angry?
Yeah, we lost. I'm pretty pissed.
So you were angry at the start of this game then?
Geez, guys, you're like my counselor right now. I try and get an edge. I'm not angry.
He likes to talk. He likes to, as you said earlier, he likes to run his mouth. And if you're gonna if you're gonna do it, you gotta back it up. And if you don't, you make yourself a very easy target for, quite frankly, like guys like Rex Ryan.
Baker Mayfield, man, a game like that, you just threw three picks. How about you take some ownership? Quit deflecting it. Sit back and say, you know what? I have to get better in the thing. I like the way he started. Said it, should never be an excuse.
Right.
I have to get better. End of it.
And yes, they both went to Oklahoma. And yes, they both won the Heisman. And yes, they were both the number one pick overall. Personality-wise, Kyler Murray's not Baker Mayfield.
No.
There hasn't been one, other than the quote-unquote burning desire to win, a similar personality trait between the two of them. I haven't seen it. He's just not. Did you see his reaction to winning Offensive Player of the Week? Kyler Murray?
He didn't care.
A reporter had to say, yeah, you seem thrilled. And he was kind of like,
but
whatever.
That's what we like about Kyler, right? He's not too high, he's not too low. Even Ryan Leaf in that thing says, I started 2-0 in my career. I was talking a lot of smack. And then I walk into Kansas City, put up the worst football game of my existence. I've always been this brass, arrogant kind of guy. That's the way I came back at everybody instead of just walking in front of the cameras going, oh, my God, this was my fault, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it doesn't happen again. So he's saying, I see the same thing of Baker. Baker's a brass guy. He's an arrogant guy. He's not a guy that a lot of people like. He doesn't come off as a likable guy. So Murray, I don't think we'll ever have to worry about that. Murray is not an egotistical maniac. He's not a brass guy. He's not, he doesn't come across as a kid that you root against. He doesn't say anything that's going to make you not like him, And I think a lot of it is just, for him, it's just his goal. And I don't think you'll see Kyler Murray doing some of the stuff that Baker Mayfield did in the offseason.
Cliff Kingsbury yesterday on how Kyler handles all of this pressure.
Any expectation any outside person could ever put on him falls very short of the expectation for himself. And I think that's been his whole life, what he's expected to be and expects himself to be and play. And so that to me, anything anybody puts on him, it doesn't touch what he expects of himself.
And I think that's why he reacted the way he did to winning Offensive Player of the Week. Yeah, you seem thrilled. Well, almost a shrug of the shoulders, almost as if to say, yeah, I got bigger fish to fry. I got far, far more important things in this league I want to accomplish than being the Offensive Player of the Week after week six.
It's like you if you would win Employee of the Month here, If you got Employee of the Month, you'd probably play it off as, I got bigger fish to fry.
Well, when you've won Employee of the Year, it's...
Oh, have you? I didn't even know we had an Employee of the Year.
We used to.
Did we really?
And I did.
It was before my time.
No, you were here. I beat you,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, good for you!
Yes. Yeah, I...
That's because you're a little bit more like Kyler Murray. I'm a little bit more like Baker Mayfield.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no doubt. Oh, if you were Employee of the Year, we would be reminded of it on probably a monthly basis. It was like 2010, 2011.
I did win Employee of the Month. I cheated to win it, but I did win Employee of the Month.
You hacked into somebody's email.
Doug Franz.
It was Doug Franz. He left his computer open.
And I wrote an email to the station about how great I was.
Back when we did Employee of the Month, you nominated yourself from Doug Franz's email. And this was like he had been here a month, right? He had just walked in the door.
He left his email open. I sent they were taking nominations for Employee of the Month. I wrote this thing about how awesome I was
and
pretending to be Doug. And then little bit I know it, 3 weeks later, state of the station said our Employee of the Month is Gambo and listen to what one coworker had to say. And I'm like, oh my God, I wrote that.
It's so embarrassing.
I wrote that.
It's so funny, but it's so embarrassing.
It's true, too.
Join us this Friday. That would be tomorrow. Join the employee of the month over here and the employee of the year over here. We're going to be at Tatum and Shea tomorrow at the Fry's. Big, huge Fry's there at Tatum and Shea. We'll be there from 2 until 6. We're supporting Pepsi. They're the official sponsor of Blitz the Bayou. Plus, every time Christian Kirk scores a touchdown this season, you'll score a free six-pack of Pepsi mini cans at Fry's Food Store. So go to the events page, arizonasports.com. Come see us tomorrow. Tatum and Shea and the Fry's Food Stores. We'll be there from 2 until 6. The ASU HBO 24/7 special, it lived up to the hype. Now, can ASU use it to their advantage? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
You got to be able to bet on you. Doesn't matter what anybody else says. You don't need confirmation. You don't need it. I'm willing to bet on me. And that's what I said when I took this job. I've been betting on me my whole life. And I ain't afraid to do that. And I don't care what anybody else says.
A format like last night's show, Herm Edwards was built to be on a show like that. He was built to be featured on a show like that. He was built to speak eloquently on a show like that. It was so right in his wheelhouse to watch him speaking about the pro model, about raising future NFL kids, about betting on himself, about leading the pro, all of that. That 24/7 college football special, basically a hard knock style program on ASU, was, and the fact that they beat Washington State at the end of it, it was a perfect, perfect commercial for ASU football.
Was it more of a commercial for ASU football or for the Herm Edwards brand?
You know what? At this point, the two are so intertwined, I don't know if you can separate the two.
Okay,
I mean,
fair.
One is the other, and the other is one. I don't know if the two are distinct at this point.
I was extremely excited to watch it. I taped it. I got up first thing in the morning, and I watched the whole thing. I watched an hour of it. I took notes on every single part that was out there, and I loved every. It was fantastic. It was done so perfectly for ASU, the best way I could say it. It was perfect. Like, it couldn't have been done any better. And I spoke with ASU today about it. They had 300 hours of video they shot. They used 58 minutes. Rave reviews right now. This is uncharted territory for HBO. They've never done anything like this before with college football. They've done stuff with boxing and, you know, Hard Knocks in the NFL. But this has been a bonanza for ASU so far. It's really helped with recruiting, and I asked about that. And basically, these coaches and recruiters have been connecting with recruits via phone or text to make sure they're watching it and making sure that if they didn't watch it, they're going to watch it when it gets played again.
Sure.
Because this is a lot of exposure for Arizona State, and they have to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and that's why, to me, if you're talking about standout moments, and they're going to replay the show throughout the course of the week on HBO, as they like to say in the business, check your local listings. I believe if you have the HBO Go app, it's going to post on their streaming service sometime in the next couple of days so you can watch it on demand. The thing that stood out to me the most was they had this opportunity in front of them with Herm Edwards, with Kevin Mawai, with Antonio Pierce to present their pro-style model, to present their we want to make you an NFL player message. And boy, did they really pump that last night.
We have a lot of NFL talent, coaching staff, men that have played in the NFL, coached in the NFL. It's not by accident.
I practice like I played, and I think you can attest to that.
That's exactly right. And we all can, all three of us can.
And you know, I played against you.
We want guys that have aspirations to play on Sunday. I'm not going to say your son's going to play in the NFL. I will help him, but then he's got to go do it.
That's a good culture that we have set, though, that they know that any given Saturday, their number to get called.
That's exactly right.
And they got to be ready to play.
This is a program where you can be taught the way you're going to get coached at the next level, but you got to want to do this.
Now, I'm not saying it's not genuine. It's genuine, but it was also very deliberately put in there as part of the message. Kids are going to watch this. Recruits are going to watch this. Parents of recruits are going to watch this. Let's let everybody know, look at all of these NFL dudes I have on my staff. And what is our message? Man, if you are willing, we will teach you what it means to be an NFL type player. And we will get you ready for that.
And I am looking at my notes, and that stood out like a sore thumb.
I know, right? I mean, it was like the whole thing. Message was reinforced throughout the show, I thought.
I mean, here's my notes right here. Antonio Pierce, Kevin Malway, Herm in the office, talked about recruiting, the pro model. Marvin Lewis comes in offering advice on defense to Herm. Then there's a segment with Herm talking to the reporters. Yeah, it was... I mean, it was pretty fascinating. I thought it was really well done. I thought Rob Likens really stood out in the piece, and of course, Danny Gonzalez is such a great coach. And seeing his family, that was real encouraging to see. So they brought the families into it.
Mm-hmm.
Danny with his wife and his two daughters, and I thought Frank Darby. You know, they brought out like he was the funniest guy, man. He was just so funny. And that night walkthrough was crazy.
The sweetener and the tea was just so. Darby came across, like you said, as a real character.
Oh, real character.
But then he also said something, because remember, he was Todd Graham recruit, right? He's a holdover from Todd Graham. And he said, man, Edwards came in here and just changed everybody's lives.
Oh, man, I'm a great guy. Great dude, man. He came in here. He just changed everybody's life, you ask me. Everybody happy. That's what it seemed like. We winning. You see this defense? Shrap City.
Shrap City. He was just funny. He was talking about LeBron James, how he should do a TV show. It'd be better than LeBron.
But didn't you get the impression from that Darby kind of comparing Graham to Edwards kind of had this almost night and day, boy, he just came in and everybody's just in a better, happier place right now? Because I don't know if everybody was happy under Todd Graham over there. I think Todd Graham he did a lot of great things for the school.
Went back-to-back 10-win season.
A lot of great things for the program. I don't think he was an easy guy to play for, and I don't think he was an easy guy to work with.
I mean, you walk in. I mean, how much respect do you have for all these coaches on this ASU staff and this – I mean, you're sitting there and you're looking. And I thought they did a great job. Like, the Kyle Williams piece really stood out.
Yeah.
Biomedical engineer.
The Mayo Clinic.
He's walking into the Mayo Clinic. He's being mentored by a doctor and, like, working on his thesis. I'm like, damn, I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And the contrast is really – it's really, really interesting, given that when Herm Edwards was hired, everybody went, what? And when Chip Kelly was hired at UCLA, everybody went, oh, my God, here come the Bruins. The Bruins are 4-14. I saw a story today in the LA Times. 63 players Chip Kelly has run off since he's been there. That is double.
It's two-thirds.
U of A, ASU, and Oregon State. All programs that made coaching changes about the same time. Writers who cover those teams told the LA Times, about 30 guys maybe have left. 63 players have left UCLA since Chip Kelly got there. Now, some of them probably, hey, you're not going to play a whole lot, new coach, whatever. Some of them might not like them. So whatever the reasons are, I saw that number and it made ripple waves throughout college football. People could not believe that many guys have left in a year and a half under Chip Kelly.
Wow. Just goes to show you he's not happy with the guys that he has there. He needs to get his own guys in, but then it's going to take 4 years. I mean, and this is what happens. I mean, like, you know, I remember when Cutter came in for Snyder, a lot of those guys that were Snyder guys, they felt like, hey, he doesn't care about us.
Right.
You know, so your choice is either stay and suck it up or get out of there and try to play somewhere else.
And guys are going to leave. I mean, guys have left ASU. Guys left U of A when someone got there. Guys are going to leave. 63 is just a lot. And again, the contrast, and I even favorited a tweet from Stuart Mandel, because UCLA is playing tonight. They're visiting Stanford. UCLA is 1-5 on the season. They're 4-14 under Chip Kelly. He said, in honor of UCLA visiting Stanford tonight and 17th ranked ASU visiting Utah this weekend, let's revisit one of my all-time smartest tweets.
This is funny.
And he basically sent out a tweet retweeting the fact that ASU had hired Herm Edwards, ripping them for hiring Herm and crediting UCLA for hiring Chip Kelly. Let's revisit one of my all-time smartest tweets. And he just totally self-deprecating. Man, I can't believe I once said this, and yet that's where we are.
I saw Doug Tamara retweet that and be like, I love when media people do this. Yeah, you reflect on something stupid. You say, look, we do it all the time with Herm Edwards.
Of course.
We do it all the time.
We do it all the time about everything. Man, sure. If we say something that's wrong, I'll come out tomorrow and say, I was wrong, and I'll make fun of the fact that I was wrong.
Have we ever been more wrong about anything more than Herm Edwards? I don't know. Like, I don't know that there's... I don't know we've ever thought that there was anything... Like I said, more wrong. What are you laughing at?
I piped into Burnsy's ear and I said, Kendall Marshall.
That's good.
Sorry.
That's good, yeah.
Sorry, I got to control myself. Now I got to come up with something that I was wrong about so we can go tip for tat.
Kendall Marshall
here.
Not going to the Hall of Fame?
No, Kendall Marshall is not. I've got sources on this one, and they're telling me that Kendall Marshall is not going to the Hall of Fame.
I think Herm was worse.
I think Herm was worse. You know what? Herm was worse because I remember those days. It was relentless. That's the word I'll use. It was relentless. The train. Remember, we were making fun of the train.
Sun Devil?
And the train sound effect. And the fact that what was it? Rabino over at Devil's Hode Digest. Rabino. Hode Rabino at DevilsDigest.com.
Devils.
You know, almost like Herm Edwards didn't know that the Sun Devils were a mascot of the team that he just got hired. And we made fun of all of it. And we were wrong.
Yeah.
That's fine. We were wrong.
Yeah, because we thought that. Here's a guy that hasn't coached in college football in like 30, been involved with college for like 30 years, and he's 63 years old. How's he going to make this work?
Marquise Chris hasn't played for the Suns in over a season, but one of his current teammates is blaming the Suns for his lack of development and blaming the people who cover the Suns for not blaming the Suns more for it. Lot to unpack next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Just a few years ago, Marquise Chris was the 8th pick overall in the NBA draft in a year where the Suns had 2 top 8 picks. They took Dragan Bender, they took Marquise Chris, they both busted out. Then they took Josh Jackson, he appears to have busted out. And on the surface, it looks like the Suns wasted 3 very, very good draft picks on 3 players that were not worth wasting them on. Marquise Chris is now in Golden State, and Draymond Green has kind of taken Marquise Chris under his wing. And after Chris had a decent preseason game last night, 8 points, 4 rebounds in his 25 minutes, Draymond Green said, I don't think there was ever a doubt that he was a legitimate NBA player. And then went on to say, no one ever blames the situation. It's always the kid. No one ever blames the bleepy franchises. They just want to blame the kid. But no one is still going to blame any organizations. It will always be the kid's fault, and it will be the next kid that comes around his fault and the next kid after that.
It's a lot of blame to go around, but ultimately it's the player's responsibility. I mean, it is – some of these guys bust out. They don't play well. I mean, it's just – you know, that's reality here. I look at Marquise Chris, and I see a guy that – came into the league, was entitled right away. The Suns enabled him. They gave him all of this time and all these minutes. And, you know, he just wasn't good enough. But then he wasn't good enough with Houston. And he wasn't good enough with Cleveland. He's on his fourth team.
Yeah.
3 teams have given up on him. He's on his fourth team. He's 22 years old. 23 years old, whatever he is. I think he might be 22. So for me, I'm looking at Marquise Chris, and I just think that, you know, you have to take some of the responsibility. It's your career.
Yeah.
It's your career.
By the way, the Yankees just scored a run. Zach Greinke walked in a run with the bases loaded, so it's 1-0 New York in game four
is what
he meant to say.
25 pitches already in the first inning.
Game four of the American League Championship Series, and he's already thrown a bunch of pitches and still has the bases loaded. Look, We went round and round about this pretty good earlier in the show, and I think we both came to a common understanding about this. Yes, it is ultimately Marquise Chris's responsibility to ensure that he's doing everything he can to be a great basketball player. Work as hard as he can, be as humble as he can, do what his coaches are telling him to do. But I also think, and I know you agree with this, there are just certain organizations that are better at coaching, developing, and identifying talent.
Well, that's why we say set up to fail. Some guys are set up to fail. It's hard to succeed. It doesn't mean it's impossible, because look at Devin Booker. But it is hard to succeed with some of these teams that you go to that aren't professionally run.
Right.
It's hard to succeed.
I don't know if Tom Brady is Tom Brady if he goes somewhere different other than the New England Patriots. That was a perfect situation for him, with a perfect coach and a perfect culture and a perfect everything. If Josh Rosen goes to the New England Patriots, does he turn into a better player? If he goes there, instead of going to the Miami Dolphins, is he in a better situation, getting better coaching, better teaching right now? I think environment matters. And in that regard, the Suns, without question, failed some of these guys by hiring Earl Watson to be the head coach without interviewing anybody else, by the constant shuffling of front office personnel. Ryan McDonough fired 9 days before the game. All the dysfunction, all of the crazy that the Suns had going on. There's no doubt an environment like that makes it extremely challenging for guys to be as good as they can be. But you're right. Ultimately, it's the guy.
Yeah, because Devin Booker's been in a toxic environment. He hasn't been on a winner. He's lost a lot. He's had a different coach every year and hasn't been surrounded with a lot of great talent. But Devin Booker has found a way to have success. So ultimately, it is the player's responsibility. And then again, you could sit there and blame the Suns. And obviously, they didn't set up a foundation that was best suited for these younger players to come in. But some of the young players that they drafted may have not been good enough. And we'll find out as they go through other teams. We'll find out. Dragan Bender signed with somebody. He's, Alex Len is playing. Josh Jackson's in Memphis. And now you've got Marquise Chris in Golden State. Let's see what happens. Chris did go to the Houston Rockets. Didn't work out. Then he went to Cleveland. Didn't work out. Now he's with Golden State. Is it going to work out? I mean, I don't know. If it doesn't work out after four or five teams, a lot of these guys find themselves out of the league.
Now, where I think Draymond Green was crazy, and I say this just given that we've worked here as long as we have, and I know for a fact that he's wrong about this. He is absolutely wrong about this. He was asked, well, then why do players get the label of draft bust, but organizations don't share that same responsibility? And Draymond Green basically said, well, it's you. It's you and the media. His exact quote was, quote, no Phoenix writer is going to bash the Phoenix Suns. But let's be frank about it. When he was there, the organization was terrible. Everything was going wrong, but he get blamed like he's the problem. When he left, ain't nothing go right. But because you're friends with them and you want all the access from them, the way you guys will come out and bash players, you don't do that to organizations because you're protecting your assets and you're protecting your future. Draymond, I can assure you, John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, Dan Bickley, Vince Barata, Doug Franz,
I've taken a blowtorch
Ron
Wolfley, to this team at times.
Kent Summers, Greg Moore, Scott Boyle. I'll go down every media. Tim Ring, Jude LaCava. Who do you want? Who do you want who works in the media here in the Valley? I assure you, we have not given the Phoenix Suns organization a free pass on the dysfunction that has infected that organization for the last 5 years.
No.
I promise you, no, we have not.
From the owner's inability to hire an experienced general manager and turn things over to somebody, that has experience, to the hiring of Lance Blanks, who I said is the personality of a thumbtack, to Lindsey Hunter and some of these ridiculous hires with guys that never had any experience coaching and stabbed guys. And every time that I say Lindsey Hunter, stabbed guys in the back to get that job. Yep. Gentry in the back. No problem taking a blowtorch to coaches and GMs and owners through this. But it does seem like now they, Robert Sarver hired an experienced coach in Monty Williams, who's taken teams to the playoffs a couple of times and was in Philly as an assistant and seems to know what he's doing. And James Jones went out and got a bunch of veteran players, that are going to fit in instead of, misfits like they had in previous years. So it does seem like now it's headed in the right direction.
Patrick Mahomes just tossed a touchdown pass to get the Chiefs on the board. Pending the extra point, they'll go up 7-6 over the Denver Broncos. The Yankees only got one run with the bases loaded
Sanchez
and two out.
Struck out on three pitches.
Sanchez struck out with the bases loaded against Zach Greinke, but Greinke threw a ton of pitches in that game.
Yeah, they had Peacock warming up in the bullpen. That's how many pitches he threw. Sanchez got bumped down to seventh in the lineup. They batted Hicks third. They batted Gary Sanchez seventh in the lineup because he's not hitting.
And that's our Coors Light What's On Tonight, brought to you by Coors Light. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. The games we're watching tonight, the Chiefs taking on the Broncos, the Yankees taking on the Astros, and of course the Coyotes back in action tonight, hosting Nashville at Gila River Arena. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff to watch tonight. This Sunday, Daniel Jones will face the Cardinals as a member of the New York Giants. There was a scenario where he perhaps could have ended up here. We'll paint that picture for you coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Cliff Kingsbury said it yesterday. Yeah, we like the kid out of Duke.
Really liked him. Smart, productive. I mean, coming from Texas Tech, you know, you appreciate the guys that you may not always go out there with the top talent around you, but he battled his tail off and he kept those guys in every game he played in, and you can appreciate that. And I kind of have a soft spot for that and knowing what that's like each week. And he's a really good player.
A soft spot in particular for guys who might get a little overlooked around the draft because they didn't play for the biggest, best, baddest college programs out
there. Yeah, I mean, I think Patrick is – Mahomes is the biggest example. I mean, a lot of guys, because he had a losing record in college, or I mean, how can you miss on that kid? Like, if you go back and watch his tape, it's pretty evident. But that's tough when you turn on the film, and it may not look like it's supposed to look, and they're not winning 50-10 every week. I think guys just miss.
Now, you had reported at the time, about 2 weeks before the draft in April.
April 12th.
That the Cardinals did, in fact, work out Daniel Jones. And I remember at the time, that was, I think, our top story of the day. And we talked about it multiple times as if to say,
why?
Yeah, what is up their sleeve? What are they doing? Why, you know, we know it's either going to be Kyler Murray or Josh Rosen. What's this Daniel Jones workout have to do with anything about it? In retrospect, what we come to find out.
Well, the reason they worked him out is because there was a lot to like about him. I mean, you know, they went to Duke. They worked him out. They thought he was a very smart quarterback, good decision maker, well-coached, accurate passer, really good athlete, could get out of the pocket, make plays with his feet, and good on the bootlegs, the play action. There was a lot to like about him as a quarterback that they did like. The reality is they liked him better than Josh Rosen. And there was still a possibility, as slim as it may have been, there was still a possibility that they could have traded down. If somebody would have blew them away with an offer to move up, that they could have moved down. And if they had moved down to a spot, I'm not going to say anything in the top 10, but because if they, even if in the top 5, they would have taken Bosa or Quinnen Williams or somebody. But if they had moved down to, say, 13 or 14, they probably would have taken Daniel Jones because they liked him better than Rosen. So that's why they worked out Daniel Jones, and they worked him out, and they liked him better than they liked Josh Rosen. So Kyler Murray wasn't the only quarterback that could have replaced Josh Rosen. I think that they looked at Daniel Jones as the other guy. If they could get their hands on him, they probably still would have moved. They would have moved on from Rosen as well.
Yeah, except that the New York Giants then threw a monkey wrench into everything
right.
by taking Daniel Jones number 6. So in a
but it was
way,
a moot point because the Cardinals took Murray. So it was a
well,
moot
no,
point.
It was, but it would have been one of those plans where you would have had to be really sure that, hey, if none of this works out, we can still stick with Josh Rosen and be happy with what we got. Because imagine if you move down to 14 or 15 with the idea, we'll take Daniel Jones because we like him better than Josh Rosen, only to find that the Giants take Daniel Jones number 6 overall, and now you're stuck with Josh Rosen. So you would have had to have been sure if you made a move like that, hey, we'll move down to 14 or 15, wherever it would have been, and if Daniel Jones isn't there, A, there's still a guy that we really like at number 15 that we could have taken, and B, we're still very comfortable with Josh Rosen as our quarterback. Because if you go down there hoping that Daniel Jones is there and he isn't, now you're screwed.
Yeah, and there's no question that if they would have moved down to 15, it wouldn't have been to get one guy. You know, you're just doing your homework on guys that could be there at 15.
Just in case.
And who do you like the most? And I'm telling you, they liked Daniel Jones better than they liked their own Josh Rosen.
Yeah. It's interesting because we talked about this a little bit yesterday. One of the writers in New York who covers the Giants for The Athletic said, the Giants are so enamored with Daniel Jones that, honestly, if they had the number one pick overall in the draft, they might have taking Daniel Jones number one. They just love him. They think he is everything that they want their quarterback to be, that it might take him a little bit to get there. He's going to go through the rookie bumps and bruises and things like that. I'll be really curious to see, and this is going to be one of the number one things, the obvious number one thing to watch on Sunday, how much better does he play when he gets guys back? Because he's going to get guys back.
Right.
Evan Engram is back. Saquon Barkley is back. Those are obviously two big ones, especially when you consider Engram's tight end numbers against Arizona. If they get Sterling Shepard back, it'll be the first game they would have played this year where his four main weapons are on the field with him. Shepard, Tate, Engram, and Saquon Barkley.
That's why he's had some struggles lately. I mean, if you look at the amount of balls he throws into what they consider tight windows, he like leads the league in balls thrown in tight windows. Nobody's getting any separation. He's got no choice. Got to throw it to all the guys are covered because you don't have your weapons out
yeah,
there.
And you know what he also, I saw the same number you did. He also throws into those tight windows because he's viewed by many as sort of a riskier quarterback, a guy who's willing to chance it and throw it maybe into places that he shouldn't throw into. He also loves to throw the deep ball. far more than Eli Manning does. He throws the ball down. Now, he hasn't completed a ton of them, but he's hit on a couple of them for touchdowns.
Yeah, hasn't been many, but he does.
I think he's 3 for 20 on passes 20 yards downfield or more. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Yeah, so he's
not a high percentage, but he's kind of a boom or bust guy when he throws it down.
No risk and no biscuit guy. Let's take a couple shots down the field and see what we come up with. Yeah, that's part of what he does. Now, you know, we'll see, because these are two quarterbacks that were both drafted in the top 10, and there's a lot of hype in this game because of two of them. And you know, from our perspective, we always, you know, rip on these national shows that haven't watched Kyler Murray play a damn game but feel like they can comment about Kyler Murray. Now you'll get to see Kyler Murray. So, not that it matters.
No.
I mean, if he doesn't have a good game, I mean, it is what it is.
Do we care what Stephen A. Smith really thinks about Kyler Murray?
No, I just like begging on those guys, because it's so obvious that they haven't watched a damn football game that Kyler Murray's played in.
Yeah.
They haven't. I don't even know if they've even watched highlights.
So, that's the Cardinals game this weekend. We've obviously also got a full slate of Pac-12 football that starts tonight as well.
Pac-12 preview with Burns and Gambo. Brought to you by Dos Equis. Keep it interesante.
Here's what we've got going on tonight in the Pac-12. 1-5 UCLA is taking on Stanford. That game is getting set to get underway here in the next 5 minutes or so. The rest of the conference schedule, Oregon State at Cal, okay, not great. Colorado at Washington State, maybe kind of interesting. U of A versus USC. Those are 2 1-loss teams in the Pac-12 South. That's a very interesting game between those two.
Well, yeah, because they're both still alive.
No doubt.
I mean, the loser of that game is, not that it's an elimination game, but the loser of that game's in a tough spot to come back and win the Pac-12 South. The winner's in a good situation.
But the two marquee games, arguably nationally, I mean, the only one that's bigger nationally is Penn State-Michigan in the Big Ten. Ranked versus ranked, you got two of them in conference. 12th-ranked Oregon at 25th-ranked Washington.
Not an easy game to play for Oregon.
Not at all.
Not an easy game.
Nope, and that's a huge regional rivalry. That place is going to be nuts. And then, of course, 17th-ranked ASU versus 13th-ranked Utah. And if you missed it earlier, our buddy Chris Cartman over at Sun Devil Source, he tweeted out the weather.com forecast. 80% chance of rain, 53 degrees, 15-mile-per-hour winds. For that Utah ASU game,
heavy
up
dose
there.
Of, you know, Benjamin in that football game.
Sounds like Enzo.
Heavy dose of
Zach
Eno.
Moss too, right? It's
yeah.
It's they are very difficult to run against. I think they're second in the nation.
And if you know they're
in
running,
rush yards per game allowed, that Utah defense, that's going to be a tough game for. This is the most balanced team they've played all year. They're top 25 offense and defense. Utah, they haven't played anybody great. But it's a very balanced team they're playing. It's going to be a tough one this weekend for ASU.
Yeah, but ASU has had success against them.
Yes, they have.
They came into Pac-12. I mean, they beat them last year pretty good with N'Keal Harry having a big game, and they beat them the year before.
All right, Big Red Rage is coming up next. Max Garcia is the special guest. We're going to be live from Fry's tomorrow. Tatum and Shea from 2 until 6. Come say hi to us.
Have a good night, everyone.